Hey, welcome to the Hairy Man Show number 12, where we talk to drummers in all shapes and sizes. Today we have a really cool episode. We have Ben from the band Nothing More. They've toured around the world with countless big acts too. Ben is just an all-around great drummer. I mean, everything he touches, he has the Midas touch himself. I met him back in the Phoenix scene quite a bit. I think it was about 10 years ago, Ben. Was that?
Yeah, man. That's depressing to think about, but yeah, I can't believe it was that long ago.
Yeah, I was working at a music store and I ran into you. And thing about Ben, he passed a couple of projects along to me that I kind of stayed with short term and long term, I believe, there as some mutual friends. But yeah, I mean, back to what Ben, you were in a big band called Digital Summer there for about how long was that? A couple of years?
Oh man, I would say about 3 or 4 years. It felt like longer. But yeah, I did like one full album with them. Actually, wait, I recorded two albums with them, and I think that's about 4 years.
Oh, nice. And we'll back up a little bit. I was watching in your previous interviews that you started playing piano at a young age, right?
man, I don't know where you saw that.
it was on the Sabian page.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I forget what I don't know. I my memory is just awful nowadays.
No, I get it.
But my mom taught me, like, she tried to teach me some music, and I could read treble clef, but bass clef is always my downfall. Mm-hmm. But she kind of just taught me a couple things just by memory, because she was actually a very good piano player herself. And just a few, you know, like basic part of like Furley's or Star Wars and Charlie Brown and just like a couple other things that, for some reason, I've just been able to like retain throughout the years, which is always fun. It's such a cool instrument, man. Like that's one of those, I don't know, if I ever just have the time and opportunity, I'd love to get better at piano, because it's just such an amazing instrument. Like watching someone be amazing at piano is like, that's the coolest thing.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a stint with that myself, but I like to go back to it myself as well.
I feel like I barely even have time to keep up with drumming, and that's like my thing. So that's a dream right now, but we'll see.
And then fast forward a little bit, did you start playing drums around that time, or were you, it was a couple of years?
No. I didn't start playing until much later. I dabbled with that I think I took like one lesson for it, but I never really got too far, like actually really pursuing piano. I ended up getting into saxophone, and I played that for about 6 or 7 years, and got pretty good. You know, it's like first chair, sometimes second chair, if I was like up against some older, you know, further, you know, like eighth graders when I was like a seventh grader or stuff like that, like the older kids, in the jazz bands and all that stuff. But, once I got into drumming, I kind of never turned back to anything else.
Yeah. And that was what your high school era kind of years there?
I got my first drum set. I think I was like midway through seventh grade, about to get into eighth grade. And then pretty much as soon as I got a drum set, I just started trying to bring anyone that I knew that played any instrument over to just jam, regardless of whatever that would have sounded like. Like if it was like a trumpet player, come jam. If it was a bass player, come jam. If it was anybody, if it was another drummer, just come jam.
Nice.
And so I'd have like pretty much I'd have like a weekly schedule almost of just like every day is a different person or group of people that would just come, and we would just dick around and just try to play something.
Yeah.
I just really wanted to play with anybody.
Yeah. I relate to that, about the same age as myself, but, you were in a local band called Comfort for Change at first, right? I think that's where I kind of met you, right about that time. And you guys were doing...
Yeah, I mean, there was a number of a fairly serious, small, you know, quote-unquote smaller bands up until that point. But that was like my first, I would say, like, legitimate band in terms of, like, really focused on songwriting and you know, having, like, very, you know... past a certain point, you're kind of like limited by who you know, mm-hmm. and certain people will be very good at certain things and other people will not be as good at their instrument, but there's someone who you know that does it, so that's kind of what you go with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a band of everyone that was like very talented, especially the singer, Richard, and yeah, so, and we've actually been able to draw, you know, a couple hundred people to a show, which was pretty a nice change rather than just like playing a show for me and all my friends' parents.
Yeah, been there too. And then, I mean, you were playing in Pearl at the time, right, too? I remember you having a reference kit. I know you recently just switched to DW. How do you feel about that recently?
Man, I'm good with it. I love Pearl still very much. And, that's the first drum set I ever had out of Pearl Export Select.
Nice.
Kit. I still have one of the shells that I just completely forgot that I even had. but I sold the rest of the kit to a friend of mine. And, I don't know. I just kind of got to a point where I've been playing them for, you know, 19 years, and I got endorsed by them. And, I really liked it, but I kind of just wanted, I don't know, every now and then you sort of like, I guess it's like a similar moment if you look in the mirror, you're like, you know what, I'm just tired of growing out my hair, or I'm tired of having short hair, I'm going to grow out my hair. I just want something different.
Yeah.
I just want to try something different. I've been doing this thing for a long time, and I've always heard, you know, DW was just like the top tier thing. And so I was just like, well, I'll hit them up and see maybe if they're interested. And they got back to me like immediately, which was really cool. In terms of like them as a company, like any kind of communication stuff that I've had with them, it's been unbelievably great. They're just super, super responsive and very easy to talk to with any kind of issues or questions I have on anything. And yeah, man, so I got like my quote unquote dream kit built that I was able to get here in Phoenix, which is I'm kind of hoping is going to be like my new forever kit, I guess you could say.
Oh, are you going with the collector series or exotic?
I got the collector's maple kit.
Oh, nice.
With, like if you're familiar with the finish, it's like the black velvet wrap with the black hardware, and then I got a knurled nickel over steel snare with die-cast hoops.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I have a couple DWs myself. I have the Navy Diamond, which is similar. It's the one that came before that. But that kit, I think it was a 2003 model, but it's a great kit. I still use it for, like, you know, cover bands, stuff like that when we were playing. But
I've heard the jazz kits are pretty awesome, too. Like, just the, they're very, like, lightweight shells, and they have a great tone, but don't just ring for days.
Yeah.
I was talking to a buddy of mine who works there. I play Call of Duty with a fair amount. I've asked him a whole bunch of stuff. Like, they have like a concrete snare.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that, where it's like, man, that's wild. I really want to try it, but I also kind of don't, because then if I love it, I'm going to really want it. And I don't need a mountain of snare drums, but it would be kind of nice to have.
Yeah, I have a friend that uses that for his drum cover, and it's a great snare. It actually sounds different than you would think it would sound. It's real like fat and kind of focused a little bit. But I'm looking to get one myself here as well.
Yeah, I did try one of their the collector's brass snares that they had, and it sounded really good. so I already know I want that at some point. Yeah. And I don't know, I'm just trying not to make the list too big for my own, you know, wallet's sake. Yeah.
Have you been to that factory before?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I went down there
at some point.
I went down there probably like 15 years ago, and I actually got to sit behind the Bozzio kit. And Neil Peart's kit was set up in the corner, but no one was allowed to go around it, obviously. And yeah, you got to check that place out, man. It's the real deal. It's kind of humbling at the same time.
Awesome.
Yeah, I imagine they're happy to have you there. But and just to kind of go back to what we were talking about bands, I know you had a stint with Digital Summer, as we mentioned earlier. But I remember a funny story. Before you joined Nothing More, I went to go see Adrenaline Mob at a place called Joe's Grotto, which is a local for anyone that knows here in Phoenix, that when they were open. But Nothing More was opening for Adrenaline Mob. And I remember watching them going, man, these guys are going to be big, man. You know what I mean? Like, how come they shouldn't be opening for Adrenaline Mob? And it was just, that singer just had the some of the best presence I've ever seen. And, you know, the whole percussion. They were doing, I don't know if you guys still do it, but they were doing the whole machine. And they were all like kind of doing a drum solo on it, and I was like, "What the heck is this?" Yeah, I just remember.
Oh yeah,
I just remember being.
I mean, it's still there. There's a lot right now, and we're working on our Dan, the bass player who builds all that stuff. He's working on this gigantic machine, right now. I don't even really know how to describe it. But a spectacle, I guess, is kind of what it will end up being.
Yeah.
If it comes to fruition, it's got to pass all the, trial by fire, I guess, being implemented and actually making sure it's a functional, reliable thing, which is, we're planning to make happen.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We got a lot of that stuff now. I don't know if you've seen in recent videos, we have a thing called the Scorpion Tail, which is basically that contraption that you saw, except it gets shot up in the air and then turns sideways with a giant welded MIDI controller that we call the Scorpion Tail.
Jesus.
Johnny will stand on top of the thing, so it's like 14 feet high total or something like that. Yeah. And then he live manipulates the guitar and bass pitch and his vocals with this plugin called Stutter Edit, and then just kind of tapping and directing to their Axe FX to control their pitches up and down.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I've never seen it being like, what the heck, dude? in a good light. I mean, I just, fast forward a little bit, how'd you run into those guys? Was it just more of a friend of a friend thing, or you reached out to them?
I had heard of them. I actually, I had never seen them play. I was technically supposed to, not intentionally, but they were out with Periphery.
Nice.
And I was just a fan of Periphery at the time, and I was going to go to that show, but I got sick. Ended up not going. And I had heard about them, and I had some friends of mine who were like, dude, this CD is great, and yada, yada, yada. And I was in a previous band at the time, and we were about to go record an album. So, I try to find, I'm just curious what this band's about. Like, I had heard the radio song at the time, which was This Is the Time.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me. And, so I went and picked up the CD at Zia. And was listening to it. And was like, oh, this is fairly progressive for being a
radio band.
A band popular on radio.
Yeah.
Because usually, I don't know. It was like having come from the digital summer world or something like that. It's usually in not to mean it as a pejorative term, but it's a lot more basic.
Yeah.
Is what I would expect to hear. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice because I personally am a little more into giving a little bit more. The substance in the music, and they gave that in a way that was very tasteful that could apply in that radio world.
Yeah,
so that was really cool. And kind of was listening to them the production and everything was really good. It kind of didn't go off of that for a lot of we should do what they did, but it definitely influenced whenever in the process with that band, it was we should tame this down or tame that down. I don't think we need to, man. The times are changing. Listen to this shit. Let's just play something. If we think it's cool, let's just leave it. Why do we got to make it lame for the sake of thinking that it's, I don't know. Yeah. I just don't like that way of thinking.
Yeah.
And so we ended up doing this album with that band, and we had just got a brand new singer at the time who had never toured or anything. And we just knew all of us knew that there was going to be at least 6 months before any sort of touring even happened at all. And mm-hmm. this band I was in was unsigned also. Mm-hmm. So it was just very, who knows really what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2 days after I got back from tracking drums and I was just in Arizona, basically until further notice, I got a call from a buddy of mine who, this guy, Elias Mallon. I don't know if you know Elias.
It sounds familiar.
Great, great dude. Very, very solid drummer. He plays for Kesha, MGMT, I think is the other band. But Kesha was his main gig. Yeah, he's also played Filter and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
Kill Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's referred me to a couple of things in the past that for one reason or another just never worked out. But he referred me to this, but he wouldn't tell me what it was. He was just I can't tell you, but I think that you would like the band, and they're musically pretty cool. Are you interested? And I was just I probably shouldn't say no. I should at least find out who this is. So
yeah,
sure, I'm interested. And they got me in touch with their manager and talked with him the next day and told me who it was and asked me if I was interested in learning some songs. And said sure. They sent me over stems for three songs to learn and video and shoot back to him, which I did, and having, I've done that stuff before, and I always try to like be the first, but also make sure I'm not, because I'm the first, like it's not rushed and the worst or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I basically just did like a song every three quarters of a day where I just looped a song just an unbelievable amount of times and just listened to it, like just drilled it into my brain as fast as I could. Mm-hmm. And then just recorded myself playing it a bunch. And then eventually once I felt I had a take where I felt comfortable with, I just sent that over.
Nice.
And then about a week and a half later, got a call after they had gotten all their submissions in from all the people they reached out to, that they were interested and that I was the guy. And if I could come out, you know, they had two tours that they were had coming up to finish their album cycle. And they had, you know, like what you saw with them live, they have all these live drum things and these live features that they do that mm-hmm. aren't necessarily on the album. So I had like 2 weeks to learn basically the whole rest of the self-titled album. And then go on YouTube and look up all the live stuff that I could find and try to learn that.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, it was a hectic 2 weeks, 'cause I had never done any kind of national touring on that level. Mm-hmm. And it was, followed by an arena tour with Shinedown.
Jesus.
So I was like, man, I really need to know these songs, 'cause I don't want to get out here and have it not practiced enough. And like, these guys have been playing these songs for years.
Yeah.
And I've been playing them for, it would have been 2 weeks now. So yeah, man, the timing of it was kind of perfect the way it all worked out. 'Cause I was living, with my girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And they, she plays in a band called I Set to Kill. Mm-hmm. And they all were living in a house together and I was living with her. And usually they were all there. And so when they're there, it's not like I can just start playing drums all day, every day, because that would just annoy the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
But they happened to the week that I had to start learning all this stuff, they had just left to go on tour. And it was not even like a long tour. If I remember, it was like 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So literally that window that I had to learn everything was right when I had the whole house to myself. I had my drums in town. And that had not happened in like years. Mm-hmm. For me. So it's sort of coincidental, I guess, that it all kind of lined up perfectly like that. But
yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes that's just how it works.
Yeah, I don't say this.
Yeah, I showed up and I had not ever met any of them. And they asked, like, oh, so you're a fan of the band? I was like, I bought the album. I like it. You know, I don't know. I don't, I'm not trying to,
it's all good.
Like, yeah, I like the album. I don't know you guys as people. Yeah. Like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't know you as people. I hope you're not assholes.
Yeah.
You know, because you never know. I've definitely, you meet some people that once they get a little bit of success, it goes straight to their head and they just get these God complexes.
Yeah.
And thankfully, there was just absolutely none of that with these guys.
That's good. So they're easy to live with and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're, in terms of just how the operational functions of the band is the healthiest I've ever been a part of by far.
Yeah, not to sound cliche.
Extremely democratic process. There's, yeah.
Yeah, not to sound cliche, it's but right. It is a marriage. I mean, I know you hear that all the time, but yeah, it is. I mean, you literally have to deal with each other's attitudes and habits and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, understanding where each person's coming from and not negating how they're feeling on something, but at the same time, it's up to that person to also know their own biases mm-hmm. towards something, whether it be creatively or if you're talking like logistically or trying to plan out like a business plan or something with a show and a, you know, a mood, a feeling, whatever it is, you know, ultimately if it comes down to it, we'll do like a majority vote decision if we just are at an impasse and everyone has to respect that, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. That's, you know, there's been a lot of times in a band where it's just the one guy who's like, no, this is what we're doing, 'cause I think this is best. You don't know what you're talking about. Or did you write this? Well, I don't think you did write it. I wrote it, so this is what it is.
Yeah, I've been there.
And as if that's the argument for this is what's best for the song, which it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's always fun.
I know. I know everything is kind of upside down right now. What was the last tour? You guys were just on the road with Ghost, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, the last show we did was Knotfest Mexico, which was great. Until it turned into like a riot at the end and didn't get to watch Slipknot. That kind of sucked.
Oh, wow.
yeah, the last tour we did was with Ghost.
How did that go? Was there any learning experiences from that? Or did you? Because that's a different animal with those guys, you know, probably.
I learned that there is no chance that you could ever out show this. Because their show is just insane.
Yeah, I imagine, yeah.
But it was very, very like motivating to me because they operated on such a high level. Like those guys rehearse all of the time.
Really?
And they're thoroughly legit. Like they're all singing behind those masks and they sound incredible. We would be next to the rehearsal room every day and we'd hear them. And their singer would sing like with them for hours before going and singing a show every night and sound perfect. Like it was incredible.
Yeah. So they're basically the real deal there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But, as you travel with bands, was there any drummers you came across and you're like, man, this guy's not getting the recognition he needs and, you know, you're kind of blown back by at all? I know that's a kind of a broad question there, but I mean, sometimes I see the guys, I'm like, why is this guy not getting, you know, the credit he deserves? And...
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, sorry to throw that on you.
I think he does get a lot of recognition. Brandon from Treyu. We've never actually played with the Treyu, but we played with them when it was Hell or High Water, and he was just the singer. Mm-hmm. But we played Shipwreck with him, and I had never, like, I grew up listening to a Treyu and all that, but
same here.
I'd never actually seen him play drums and sing with the Treyu. Mm-hmm. And, he plays just super solid, but I don't, like, I don't know how he does it. He seems so, like the exact same. It's like he doesn't even bother him that he's still drumming and hitting super hard and being incredibly like perfectly on time while singing this crazy high, awesome melodic stuff. But I don't know. I thought it was super, super impressive.
Yeah, he motivated me to try to see me hunting kit, and yeah, that didn't go well. Like, yeah, I mean, like, he does make it look pretty easy when he's doing those double bass chops and, you know, still belching it out.
Yeah. So yeah, just in terms of what like someone brought to the table, he definitely is fantastic at that. I don't know if I could say, like, I think he's definitely very appreciated. I won't say he's underappreciated. We played with this band, The Contortionist, and they had a fill-in drummer, this guy, Johnny Concan, and he is, the fact that he could come in and fill in for a band like The Contortionist was pretty wild.
Yeah.
That dude is a fantastic drummer. I'm not sure. I don't know if he's playing with anybody currently. I think he does some session stuff here and there. But,
I should
just watching like, God, dude, I do not want to play after this guy.
Maybe I should back up. But who are you mainly influenced by coming up on a drummer? And who do you still watch and you're still in awe about? Maybe I should ask you like that.
Growing up, like when I was a kid, there's like that video of Tony Royster Jr., I'm sure a lot of drummers have seen when he was a kid.
With Dennis Chambers.
And I would sit down and actually try to learn some of that. Because I was like, man, it was just incredible. And then just seeing some videos of like Dennis Chambers, and just how fast he was with his singles around the kit. Mm-hmm. Danny Carey, obviously, listened to, Tool.
Yeah.
As you do. Benny Paul and Raymond Herrera, Benny Paul, obviously, mm-hmm. and Tara and Raymond Herrera was the drummer for Fear Factory. Mm-hmm. The first time I heard, I think it's called Securitron or something like that. It was like track 8 off of Obsolete from Fear Factory. The first time I heard that, I just freaked out. I was like, what? How is this possible that someone can play this that fast?
Yeah.
What was the song?
There was an album they did called Archetype. I think number 2, it started with that blast beat before blast beats were kind of big. I think you know what I'm talking about. I forgot the name of the song. I blank out when I need it. But yeah, I remember thinking he was kind of like the first person to really revolutionize blast beating a little bit there. But he really, you know, and he kind of had that like robotic sound where it's like, that's the only way you can really do with the band like that. And, you know, it was like, yeah, it was different. You know, it kind of blew me away as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah. And the old Slipknot stuff, which was.
Oh, yeah.
Even listening to it now, it's like, dude, this is like an incredibly heavy album for how mainstream it became.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember reading articles about him and modern drummer Joey Jordison. He said he actually had to run every day to get his, you know, his calves up to snuff and all that stuff. And then he's so I did go through a Joey Jordison phase myself. But yeah, I remember just listening to it going, I got to do that. You know, I got to get there. And, you know, as you mentioned, you can't really, like,
play that intro to Six, you know, as high as you can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We played that in my high school cover bands and all that stuff. It's just one of those songs that everyone had to do.
Yeah.
All right.
And but I don't know, so like that, and then like Andy coming from Pantera was like a huge, I kind of want to sit down and try to learn that nowadays, because I feel like I could play it, but it's still something that like mentally seems like such a big hurdle, because it was just one of those influential, like, I'll never figure out how to play this.
Yeah, I felt that way about Ticks and Leeches on Lateralis. You know, when I first heard that, I'm like, there's no way. And then as you break it down, you're like, oh, you know what? I can actually do this. And that, yeah, I know that feeling when you kind of go back and you're like, man, I can do it.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of that, I mean, I've had to learn over the years. Same with like the Nothing More stuff, where at first I'm just like, okay, this seems like a lot.
Yeah.
But I got to try to learn here. But, you know, it's literally, you know, you just kind of take it slow, take it one note at a time. And the next thing you know, you just played through it. You just played through it at, you know, 50 BPM slower than it needs to be. But you played through it.
Yeah.
So just get used to that. And then as soon as you get used to that, you can probably bump it up a few. And you bump it up a few. And then the next thing you know, you're playing it and it's all good.
Yeah. And I know you said you're a busy guy, but do you have a practice regimen you kind of stick with? I know you're all over the place, but is there like something you quarterly do? You stick with it to this day?
Man, I try to. As much as I really, like, I've got like a little whiteboard and everything I want to stay working on, it's just, things inevitably, you know, whether it's stuff in my, you know, just like, oh yeah, I gotta take my car in, and that ends up being like a whole ordeal, or the internet's completely out and I gotta go to Cox and get it fixed,
yeah,
or, you know, being able to upload anything at all,
yeah,
you know, it just, the usual life shit kind of will distract from that. But yeah, I mean, I try to just make it down and just like hands on sticks, just actually playing for at least a few hours every 2 days, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Ideally, like I can't, I'm sitting in front of my kit right now, probably gonna practice for a couple hours after this. Mm-hmm. I just try to mix it up between like regimented book work and like really working on new concepts and stuff like that. And then spending, what I spend a lot more of my time on now is just working on, kind of by ear playing, I guess, mm-hmm. you could say, not going to a click, because there's so much of what I do is always to a click. And not that I've mastered that by any means, but, I don't know. There's just a whole different way of going about like building your own inner tempo and not relying on a click tempo, mm-hmm. that also will help when you do play to a click, you know, mm-hmm. In terms of just getting your own internal clock as dialed in as possible. And, some, you know, depending on what you're practicing or how you're practicing, using a click is very important for that.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, like practicing, you know, finding a song that's a very slow tempo and trying to play along to that and really finding that pocket for yourself without a click, mm-hmm. Can be extraordinarily helpful, even though it seems boring and mundane or whatever, but it's like a whole different type of challenge.
Yeah, I know you know this.
So I'll do a lot of stuff like that, you know.
I know you know this, but practicing the click has actually helped my breathing a lot too, because you know when you go into a show, regardless of where you're playing, you always have that bit of anxiety, and you know you can fly off the rails real fast if you're kind of pumped up on whatever. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely learned to breathe a lot better with it, and just even listening to a click before I go perform anywhere, it's definitely a big help. I mean, I wish I would have did it at an early age, not been so stubborn, but you know,
right.
But just to go ahead.
It can. It's weird, man, when you got to play live, especially if you're all hyped up and then you listen to it. And that's part of what, I mean, that's a whole different type of practice too, is just getting some of those tempos internalized. Cause like there's certain Nothing More songs I've been able to like, no matter how nervous I am, I just know where that tempo is. Mm-hmm. And there's other ones where if I'm not as familiar with the song, it's like, oh, by naturally, like when the click comes on, like, why is this so slow? This is so crazy. And it's, usually when that happens, it's like, I feel like I'm playing it okay, but I feel like at the same time, there's no way I sound natural and just relaxed.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like your brain's going faster than your mouth kind of thing.
Right. Which, I mean, if it was playing death metal, that's probably very helpful. But trying to have a you want that perfect bit of relaxed looseness to it, to where it feels, you know,
natural,
easy on the ear, and yeah. not just constantly pushing the note because I'm my heart's going twice as fast as the click is, you know.
And not to change gears on you before we close this out, but you're a very big avid gamer yourself, though. What are you playing, and what do you recommend?
Wait, I'm sorry, you were breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not to change gears on you real fast here, but before we close out, you're an avid gamer. I was just wondering what you're playing and what you're recommending lately.
Oh man, the last night I was playing. I don't know if you've seen it, Fall Guys.
Oh yeah.
It's basically a game meant for little kids.
Yeah.
But man, when you're playing it with some of your buddies, it's surprisingly like it's so simple and easy that it's just kind of addicting, and it's pretty hilarious and just the gameplay of it. But yeah, I was playing that. It's also, if you have PlayStation, it's free right now, which is helpful. Yeah. I was playing. I mean, usually my go-to right now in general has been Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. Not so much playing Warzone, just because I just don't enjoy going through the whole game just to get killed by someone camping behind a bush the entire time.
Yeah, it's a lot of time going into it.
Yeah, yeah. So I usually stick to like multiplayer stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a few weeks ago, just finished beating The Last of Us 2.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, man. If anyone who has a PlayStation hasn't played The Last of Us 1 or Part 2, just... what are you doing? It's some of the best games that have ever come out, that have ever, like, it's incredible. It's the best zombie story / movie that you play ever. It's better than any other zombie thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that's one of those games girlfriend won't let me play without her watching. So, you know, I would have to only get like 2 hours a day into it, and it's like, all right, you know, but I would look forward to it all day. Yeah, that's definitely, if you put all the BS and all the stuff that was going on about the game, it's one for the top shelf, you know?
Yeah. I saw some of that, and I didn't try to read too much into it until after I beat it. But once I beat it, like, man, people are such fucking losers sometimes. Like, you're going to get that mad at this game because of the sexual orientation of this person or this and that, or what happened to a certain character. It's like, it's a fucking, doesn't give the video game.
Yeah. I mean,
like, unless they tried to make it like overly political, like whatever, but they didn't. It's no. Like, yeah, that shit, like nothing in that game seemed like it was forced or like intentionally trying to be politically provocative.
No,
none of it came across that way to me at all.
Yeah.
And so if it's like something super weird or like way out of unnecessary, it's like, okay, I could see how that would be sort of annoying, but it wasn't at all.
Yeah, I mean, even the ending kind of messed me up a little bit, too, though, because I didn't really see that coming. But I'm not going to spoil it here, obviously, for anyone who hasn't played it. But, yeah, you learn a valuable lesson in the end, though. And that to me, that's worth more than, you know, most games out right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a great game.
Yeah, and one I would recommend.
The other one.
Go ahead, sorry.
What's up?
No, I'm just saying.
Yeah, what were you saying?
If I could recommend one right now, I'm probably going to butcher saying this, but The Ghost of Tsushima. If you haven't played that yet, I think you would enjoy that a lot too.
I'm probably going to end up downloading that this weekend because I've heard it's basically Red Dead Redemption 2, but with samurais.
Pretty much, yeah.
And Red Dead Redemption 2 was I loved that game.
Yeah, me too.
Same with God of War.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic game. I haven't really played too much multiplayer stuff. I got super into Destiny when that first came out,
Same here.
I just got tired of the grind of doing the same level over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess technically that's what Call of Duty is, but I don't know. When you have to spend like 30 minutes shooting the same person, it gets exhausting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you for coming on and sharing your, some of your story about what you're doing, have done. Is there any place they can, I know you have a YouTube channel there, but is there a good place to go listen to Nothing More that you would recommend?
I mean, we're on Spotify, we're on iTunes, we got everything on YouTube, all the major whatever platforms.
Yeah.
We have a new site coming, man, we've been promoting it forever. We've been having some technical bugs and everything, and we got some new programmers on it, but we've got, a new site that coming out called The Pew that if you go to our page, there's some links and stuff to it there. Mm-hmm. Nothingmore.net. But it's going to have, like, we have this awesome all new web store that I've personally been pretty heavily involved with the look and everything of. Mm-hmm. And just a ton of video content and going into the writing of our current, you know, like, right, we've been writing for since November, and we're going to be for at least, you know, the rest of this year since there's no touring going on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're just kind of documenting everything and putting it up there. So, I don't know. It's just going to be a very cool, immersive thing that we hope to have, like, fully hit the ground running, in the next, like, by the end of the month, you know, that hopefully.
Yeah. And I should have asked this earlier. I know everything's upside down, but where do you guys see yourself going back on the road probably next year?
Our conservative, like, estimates, because a lot of that stuff gets booked very, very far in advance. Mm-hmm. So we kind of need to, like, you know, judge accordingly when we think it's going to be safe to start saying yes to things. Mm-hmm. And what we've done for ourselves is basically say next summer seems like the soonest potentially safe thing. But until there's an actual vaccine, I personally think there's no chance that anything is going to really be successful.
Yeah, this is the time to sharpen your blade, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's, I mean, that's a whole separate wormhole.
Oh, I know. I'm not trying to go into that.
It's going to take something very concrete to shake the mindset of wear a mask, stay away from people.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But I just want to say thank you one more time for coming on and helping me out. I'm a growing channel here, and it's going to get better as we go. And thanks, Ben. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's good talking to you.
All right. And then just to plug the channel a little bit, I'm obviously on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Just please subscribe and share and all that good stuff. You guys all have a good day, okay?